From Nepal to North London, from Delhi to Dagenham, from the terraces to the armchair, it's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
To It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. You can't see what he's doing. I'm your host Tom, and I'm in the company of a man who moves like a quilted tornado. It's the one and only Silent Dave Hutchinson. Here we are again, slightly subdued by the spanking at the hands of Patrick Vieira's crumpled phallus. But we will do our level best to bring you all the points, squeeze the pips from the fruit of disappointment for some plus points, and look ahead to the important clash with the Candy Kings of the South Coast. On the menu tonight, we answer your emails, look over the Palace game, and try to fathom out why the performance was so under par. Was it a poor Arsenal or an exceptional Palace? What an atmosphere at Selhurst Park. Electric! I'm joined by Mitch and Jay in the gun room to peel back the layers, sift through the debris and give our balanced opinion and analysis of where it all went peak-tong. We've got the transfer rumours in six words or less, and we celebrate our 50th audio podcast with a mixture of fun and football. And finally, we ask, who is the hairiest footballer ever? Come on, you've all wanted to know that one. And we reveal Arsenal's two unwanted records in a bulging, brimming, packed out, overflowing extravaganza of a show. But first, Dave was in one of his observational huffs this week when we went to have a coffee in town. As is the modern trend, parents tend to use fairly obscure names for their offspring these days. You know the sort of thing. Avocado, amethyst, Elmer, doorknob, stuff like that. Well, we're sitting there and this woman calls out to a little boy and girl, Hunter, Amazon, which made Dave go into one. I don't know why he's so bothered. What's Kanye West's son called? Northwest, isn't it? He's shaking his head again. So anyway, Dave cracks a joke about the woman being on the labour ward expecting an Amazon delivery. Hey, out of the obscure, the big fella grabs himself a joke. What a relief to get back to real football after the international flummery, where people dress up in England shirts and pay good money to pretend they like Harry Kane. You're not fooling anyone. We're on to you lot. In general football news, Chelsea are apparently looking for a new owner who shares their values. Racists, money launderers, drug cartels and war criminals are all welcome to apply. Referee Mike Dean is retiring. Unfortunately, he's going over to VAR. I've sent Xhaka a text in case he's with us next season. Dean found the most intimidating person to deal with was Le Professeur. He said it has to be Arsene Wenger when he was at Arsenal. I always found it tough, not refereeing Arsenal in general, but refereeing Arsenal when he was the manager. Since he's finished football, I have seen him and he's been great. Cross the white line and everyone is different. Referees are just normal people. We don't believe you. On the subject of refs retiring, Keith Hackett, former ref, asks who will be joining Dean. Moss is 51, Atkinson is 50, Mariner is 51, Friend is 50, Scott is 53. And he adds, the time is right for a root and branch change to the panel of referees along with management. The decline in refereeing standards must be halted. I agree with you, sir, wholeheartedly. In the news, Ryan Giggs admitted recently that he hated Patrick Vieira because he was, and I quote, dirty and got away with murder. Although, he did like the look of Vieira's wife, Cheryl. Roy Hadgett Keane certainly wasn't dirty, was he? Nor Paul No Mercy Scholes. Scholes is now a pundit who resembles a hastily assembled souffle with too many ingredients. In Arsenal news, it was Spanish Michael's 40th birthday. Let's just cast our mind back. 110 appearances for Arsenal from 2011 to 16. He cost £10 million from Everton and scored 14 goals. You know the rest. Lauren Koscielny has announced his retirement from the beautiful game. Yes, the unforgiven Frenchman. All I'm going to say is shirt. Darwin Núñez is still said to be of interest to Mikel Arteta, but it's not expected to be a cheap or easy process with the player valued at around €80 million. That's €67 million. According to Record, Arsenal are on the charm offensive to convince Benfica centre-forward Núñez to join the club this summer. The report claims that the Gunners are a few steps above the likes of West Ham United and Newcastle United in pursuit of the 22-year-old. We shall see. Arsenal is said to be interested in Reims youngster Hugo Ekitike.
Who?
Exactly. Former England striker and Arsenal fan Darren Bent says he wouldn't swap the perfect Martin Odegaard for Manchester United star Bruno Fernandes. Well, we all know that. Paul Merson, Paul the Magic Man Merson, insists the former Real Madrid player is now one of the best players in the Premier League. He said Martin Odegaard is now the main man there and the first name on the team sheet for me. He has really improved and is doing the business. The Athletic did an article on how much former Arsenal players would cost today. Bit hypothetical, never mind. On that list, they included Dennis Bergkamp for £117 million, Thierry Henry for £90 million, and Franny Jeffers for £55 million. Stop it. Bergkamp cost us £10 million in 1995, Henry was £11 million in 1999, and Jeffers was £8 million in 2001, plus £2 million in add-ons. Do you agree with those figures? What's a Tony Adams worth? Patrick Vieira, David Seaman, what are they worth by today's standards? In our opinion, Tony Adams would be worth at least the £80 million plus that United paid for Harry Maguire. Vieira would cost at least £120 million, if not more. And Seaman would be closer to £75-80 million. Brazil coach Tite, in brackets 60, I don't know why we've done that, was reportedly in negotiations with Arsenal about taking a job at the club after the World Cup. Tite said, "Sorry Arsenal, sorry Arteta, it's not a situation, it didn't come from us. I tell people who feel identified with me to be calm because Tite has a personal attitude that values his own professional activity and knows of the responsibility with the Brazilian team. So we'll give that the raspberry then." According to reports, Arsenal want Rennes' 17-year-old defensive midfielder Leslie Ugochukwu. Arsenal see him as the next Patrick Vieira, glowing praise indeed, and are growing increasingly convinced about making a move for him this summer. Now, what's your opinion on these Stella McCartney shirts? Sort of pink and red leopard skin splodges on the white sleeves. I'm not liking it, I'm not feeling it, but shut your eyes and turn the lights out and you'll look like a clown in a paint factory and it'll only set you back over £100. May the 12th is apparently, according to Optus Sport, the most likely date for the rescheduled North London Derby. It's a Thursday.
Thursday?
So that would mean the home game with Leeds on the 7th and the away game to Newcastle on the 15th, and sandwiched in between the North London Derby. It doesn't leave much space between the last two, does it?
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gun room. I've got my Podcateer family around me again. Jay's back, Mitch is here, it's all looking good. Apart from the result, that is. How are you, Mitch?
Not too bad. Disappointed by the result, but other than that.
You wanted to go, didn't you? And that would have been
I saved a lot of money.
And stress and tissues as well. Jake, yeah. How you doing? It's good to have you back.
Yeah, all good, thanks. Yeah, all good. Raring to go.
Right, okay. Well, the Palace game. Let's troll for it and try and have a smile about something positive at the end. It was fairly clear to me from the first whistle what type of game we were going to get. And me and Mitch said last time round that we thought it was going to be a bit of an edgy, bit of a cagey game. Mitch, what was your scoreline, your prediction?
I think I said 2-1 to Arsenal. I think I said 2-1 to Arsenal.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, sucky suck.
Yeah, a little off.
I went for a grubby 1-0 and didn't even get close to that, did I? It was interesting, wasn't it? They were attacking and defending in triangles. Did you see that? There's a lot of this triangular sort of business going on the pitch. I don't know whether you noticed that. Let's start off with the lineup. Aaron Ramsdale, Gabriel, Cedric Suarez, Nuno Tavares, which was a bit of a surprise, Benjamin White, Martin Odegaard, Thomas Partey, Emil Smith Rowe, Granit Xhaka, Bukayo Saka, and Alexandre lack of threat. What did you make of that lineup, Jay? Were you happy with it? Were you surprised? How'd you feel?
excuse me. Yeah, obviously losing Tierney was the big one, wasn't it? You know, it was like he's just such a huge player for us, and it's such a step down. You know, when Tavares came in, you just hope we saw the Tavares from earlier in the season rather than the one we got at Forest. And obviously Martinelli dropped down to the bench, which I was a little bit surprised at as well. But still a strong team, and I thought we were going to do better than we actually did, but. It's a funny place. I just want to say it's a funny place, Palace. You know, like it's one of those grounds that really benefits from the like, late kickoffs. You know, like it's if we play, I do believe if we'd have played him at, say, an early kickoff on a Saturday, I think we would have probably got a result. It's just such an atmospheric ground, isn't it? And it really does benefit from the later kickoff. I couldn't help but think that. But yeah, I still thought even with those players dropping out, I still thought we'd have enough to get a result, to be honest.
Mitch, any surprises for you apart from the obvious injuries?
I think there was like a little bit of worry about Tierney when like there was reports coming out before the game about him, this maybe being a very serious injury. There was a report from the Scottish Sun that this was a season ending injury, which we now know is true, which really, really sucks. I was excited to see what Tavares could do. Just like Jay said, I was excited to see if he could potentially replicate some of his form from earlier in the season. Obviously, that didn't really go as planned, and I don't think he was as bad as he was against Forest, in the match against Forest. But he definitely was not at that level that we need him to be, especially now at the end of the season, now that we're without Tierney. So other than that, that was like the only surprise in the lineup, if I'm being honest.
I think it shows, doesn't it, now that when you've got those two key players missing, you've got Tierney and you've got Tomiyasu, we managed to become a little bit lopsided. So you had the two central defenders kind of milling away and the two guys in front, Partey and Xhaka. And it was a bit of a mess. I mean, we'll go through the goals. We'll talk about the weaknesses on the Arsenal team. But did you know, here's an interesting fact, Jay, you picking up on that. Monday night football, we drew 2-2 against Palace. We lost 2-1 against Everton. We've also lost this one, 3-0 to Palace. We've got Newcastle coming up. Guess when it is? Monday.
Yeah.
Not that there's connections or I'm superstitious or anything, but it's an interesting...
I was thinking after the game that is there an issue with... Or do we tend to slip up in the later games? Because obviously we got a result against Wolves not long back in an evening game late on. But it just seems to be that it's probably just coincidence, but the later kickoffs we tend to struggle in. But yeah, I mean.
Mitch, was it a case of it was an excellent Palace or a really below par Arsenal?
Both. Palace were really good. We were really bad. I mean, they did a really good job of playing how they want to play. I think we talked a little bit in the pod last week about how they are really, really effective at pressing higher up the pitch. That's been something we've kind of struggled with, especially in away matches. I don't think it was necessarily our downfall in the match, but like it definitely didn't help because we had trouble keeping possession. We had a lot of like misplaced balls. Like Thomas Partey did not play well. He had some passes that he had a lot of time, had a lot of space, and he just passed it right to a Crystal Palace player. So Palace's pressure, the fact that Conor Gallagher has 8 lungs, just is hard to deal with when you've got this constant press against you, especially in a tough away match like it's Elhurst Park. I was watching with a friend, and he was like, Palace is a bogey team. Like, for any team that goes into Selhurst, when they weren't even that good, they were a tough team to play against in their home ground. And now they're a good team, so it's even tougher. And you see that with them coming out with a 3-0 win against us. That's not easy to do. We're a good team. We're a very, very good team. To win 3-0, it says a lot about it wasn't just an off night for us. Palace is very good.
I'll tell you what, Jay's got a point with that ground as well, because it's like an old school ground, isn't it? It reminds me a little bit of the Upton Parks and Craven Cottages, because you're so close to the pitch at times, and that atmosphere goes around that smaller ground, and it's really epic. Talking about Thomas Partey, he left the pitch, looked like he might have had a hamstring injury. How much do we put this down to this international flummery that keeps going on? There's players picking up injuries, unnecessary injuries, at a key moment in the Premier League. Jay?
I mean, first and foremost, he had an absolute shocker, didn't he? Like, it was like really bad. He couldn't even make the simple passes. And it's funny, because with Thomas, it seems to be that there's no middle ground. He's either really, really fantastic, or he is not very good at all. I don't know if there's anything to that. I just think he just had a shocker. I just wanted to add to what Mitch said about Palace. Like it's a tough game. Like, it's a hard game to play them away from home. It's as we've seen this season, you know, Man City have gone there and struggled, and like, we won't be the last team to struggle this season there. Vieira's definitely imprinted a bit of his own personality in that squad with his, you know, the strength that, you know, they were very imposing, weren't they? They weren't only just pressing us, they were strong in the tackle, and, you know, it was massively important. And I'm sure Mikel said it, that to try and take the sting out of the game, you need to retain possession and you need to take your chances. We didn't really have any chances in the first half, but we didn't retain possession at all. And we just played into their hands, didn't we? You know, and they're a good side. They're quick. They've got some good players. But more than anything, they just pressed us into the ground, didn't they? But and like I said, there's no disgrace in losing to them. Maybe 3-0, maybe so. But I think that flattered them a little bit. I do think that result, that the scoreline flattered them, even though they fully deserved the victory. 3-0, I thought, was a bit harsh on us, you know, which I'm sure the chances that we had, I'm sure we'll come to later. But I know I haven't really answered your question, but I just wanted to say, you know, the overreaction.
We like that. We like it when you avoid the question.
The overreaction that we've seen on social media from a lot of people to this result is just ridiculous. It's a hard game, man. You know, it's a difficult, difficult game. So, yeah, I'll let Mitch answer that one about the international break.
Mitch, I noticed as well, before you come to that, is the passing was absolutely abysmal. You couldn't pass a 10-yard pass, a 3-yard pass. They were too short, too long, too hard, too soft. It was an absolute nightmare. I was absolutely cursing the sofa. The cat left, buggered off as I was thumping everything and going, come on, for God's sake. Mitch, international breaks, does it affect us or not?
Yeah, I mean, I it's frustrating to see Kieran Tierney getting an injury that puts him out for the rest of the season when he was playing meaningless matches for Scotland. Like, he played every single minute of all of Scotland's games during the international break, and it's frustrating to see him pick up an injury like that when he just didn't need to. Like, it's just not a necessary thing. Like, yeah, there was World Cup qualifiers happening during the international break. Scotland was not one of those teams playing World Cup qualifiers. And it's really frustrating to see Kieran Tierney having played every single minute and get a big injury. In the same way, it's frustrating to have a break right when we're in really good form. I think a good amount of why our passes weren't on the spot is we're just off. We just hadn't played in a bit and we're just off. That could have had something to do with a poor performance. I mean, I think there's a lot of factors on why we lost, but I imagine the international break definitely
including we weren't good enough.
Yes, without a doubt. We weren't good, especially in the first half. I think we improved in the second half, and I think Like Jay was saying, I don't think 3-0 really describes the game as fully, because I think we were better than we were in the first half. However, that's a really low bar, but not necessarily good enough to like pull out a win. So 2-1 in the other direction may have been an actual better estimate for me last week.
Let's go to that first goal. Anderson, who was on our list of pickouts last week, he got two assists in this game. But it was a fortuitous opener, wasn't it, to say the least, in the 11th minute. Jay, take us through that Matata goal. Matata. Una Matata.
Yeah, he's actually decent, he is. Isn't
he is. Frightening, isn't he?
He's a big guy, and he caused us quite a few problems. It was a deep, it was a free kick, wasn't it? Deep free kick to the back post. Gabriel got a little bit underneath it. Tavares just got in a bit of a mess. And I can't remember who headed it back at the back post. I can't remember now. And there's a great shot. I don't know if you two have seen it. They highlighted it on the TV coverage. Mateta's face when the ball ends up coming towards him is absolutely fantastic. It's super, so funny. And he nods it in. Crap goal.
Well, I thought it hit Anderson on the back of the neck.
Yeah.
And he got an assist for that. Yeah, so that I could have claimed about 50 goals way back when.
Yeah, so that was it. So, yeah, it cannoned off him. We should have done a lot better defensively. And we have done a lot better, haven't we, at set pieces this season. It was just one of those... I tell you what, it was a throwback, wasn't it, to a few years back, where at these kind of grounds and these kind of games, we just get, you know, intimidated or downright scared of these kind of situations and concede goals. And you kind of thought, you know, that's not what we need in the 11th minute, right? In this, the stadium was already bouncing, wasn't it? And you're just like, oh, you know, this is going to be a difficult game. We need to hit back sharpish to try and silence the crowd. And obviously it didn't happen. But yeah, bad goal to concede.
The thing was, they drowned us out as well. And this Matata, he's a handful. He's a real physical lump, isn't he? He's a real threat, right, specimen. Mm-hmm. And he kind of reminded me of that sort of, not the same, don't write in or send me an email, but that Didier Drogba sort of powerhouse, well-built sort of in stature and stuff like that. Vieira's celebration was quite interesting. Did you see it? It was kind of like he just fist bumped, which I thought was very respectful.
Yeah,
no argument with the second goal in the 24th minute. Anderson offered a defence-splitting pass, wasn't it? It really was, and they were all caught short. IU illustrated how poor we were defensively, jumped on that ball, and everyone was second place, weren't they? Mitch, take us through that.
From what I remember, it was a bad step by Gabriel where he just didn't get the ball. Tavares was too behind to close in on it, and
just out of
IU had a good shot at goal. Frustrating to see, but like I think there's a lot of just Palace played well. We weren't up to it, but Palace was very good in the match. Yeah.
Gabriel, he like overcommitted, didn't he, to try and
get
the ball?
And absolutely.
He didn't look good. I mean, Aryu's probably one of their weaker players, and the way he slotted that in, I think he'd score like that every week, but didn't look good, did it, defensively?
No.
Well, it's a shame. As you say, social media have gone absolutely bonkers, and it's kind of Gabriel is starting to get it in the neck now. And I saw a transfer rumour saying that he might be moved on. Arteta might move him on, which I think is crazy. He's been an absolute beast for us this season. What's going on with that? Mitch, comment?
I think hearing you guys talk about social media being like mad about this game, I think that means that I've just like Gardner's a very good following list, because I haven't seen like any of that. I've seen like a lot of I think I'm following a lot of like-minded Arsenal fans, where most people I'm following are very level-headed about the match, where it's like, yeah, we were bad.
Yeah.
Wasn't a good performance, but we were also like bound to drop points at some point. This is not the end of the world. We still have a game in hand over Spurs. We're still tied with them on points. We're going to be okay. We still have a very good chance to top four. It's not going to be easy, but we still have a very good chance at it. And I haven't seen anyone saying that we needed to sell Gabriel or like yeah, he did not have a good game. But and like there's rightful criticisms that you can have over Gabriel. He's a very good player, but he definitely has his weak spots in his game that he needs to improve on. Decision-making like that, definitely a big one. That's something that we need to look out for when Saliba comes back next season, of the potential of him potentially taking that spot. Even though he's right-footed, he's played as a left center back before. I think that if one of our two starters gets replaced by Saliba at one point, I think there's a better chance it's Gabriel than Ben White. And so Gabriel needs to kind of figure out these issues, but I don't see us selling him anytime soon. There's just no reason for that. I think that's a wild take or rumor or whatever
just
it was.
A bit.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's other ones as well. Odegaard copped it as well, but we'll go to this. Arsenal fans A1. Did we underestimate them? He's struggling to work out what happened, he says. Jay?
Did we underestimate? I think probably not. I don't think there was... I don't think Arsenal approached the game in a complacent, from that point of view. I just think maybe we expected a little bit more from us, didn't we? Like, we expected, after the form we've been in. But I think even without the international break, this is a hard game. Like, it's no two ways about it. Like, those are, what was it, five before the Palace game? What was it, five away wins on the trot? You know, that's brilliant. And the result at Villa was fantastic. And but this is, you know, it's just a tough game. I think I think the surprise was more in that how badly we played and how we kind of just keeled over and rolled over and died, apart from a sort of a 15-20 minute period in the second half where maybe we should have definitely scored one or two of those chances. We just got dominated, and it's just, for me, it's just one of those games that, look, I don't think we approached the game with any complacency. And we didn't underestimate Palace. I think everybody knew it was going to be a hard game. For me, it's one of those fixtures every season, even when Hodgson was in charge or whatever. Palace away is a hard game. And I think any right-minded Arsenal supporter knew it was going to be tough. But no, I don't think we underestimated him. We just didn't turn up.
They did their homework, didn't they? They shut down the channels. And then they did, as I say, this triangular thing. There was a triangle of players. And then behind them, left and right, there was a triangle of players again. So wherever the Arsenal attack went, someone shut them down. And our passing didn't really help. We just really mugged ourselves off.
You know, I can't think of one occasion where White was able to bring the ball out from the back and drive through the middle. They just shut that off. Odegaard, he struggled. He needs the ball into him. He needs to be able to receive the ball on the half turn and drive forward and look for that pass into Saka. He didn't even have the chance, did he? He couldn't receive the ball, as in the position that he needs to. They tactically got it just right.
Odegaard is a man who operates in very little space, but they gave him very, very little space. And that was where he couldn't get moving.
These players, it's a young team, that very inexperienced in a lot of areas. Excuse me. And this is where you need your players like Kieran Tierney, who's experienced and he's not afraid to roll his sleeves up and get involved. It's not, I think out of the games we've got left, it was easily one of the more tougher ones. And obviously we got beat, but just put it behind us for me. Just put it behind us.
Unfortunately, we're not going to do that yet. Mitch, mm-hmm. When we saw Cedric and Tavares getting rinsed, would it have been a temptation just to automatically revert to a back three and maybe bring Rob Holding on?
Not when you're down. I think we've seen the back three with Rob Holding work really effectively when we want to keep a lead, specifically late into matches. When we're chasing a lead, I think that would have been a very, very poor decision. The main reason we switched to a back four all those months ago in December of 2020 is because we had that tough period because we weren't able to create. The 3-4-3 had worked really nice for us for a long time, but it wasn't creating a lot of goals. because of its kind of defensive stature. And so by doing that, we would be limiting ourselves offensively when we're chasing a goal. I actually really liked all of Arteta's subs in this match. I like when we're down 2-0, like, yeah, I don't mind the thought of taking off Tavares for Martinelli and moving Smith Rowe into that left eight and just like having these like five attackers going forward and dropping Xhaka into that left back position. I don't actually mind that. I think that was a pretty good substitution. We got close in a couple opportunities after that substitutions in the second half. I think we attacked pretty decently for like the opportunities that we got. But like Jay was saying, like there's no easy games in the Premier League. Like this isn't a game that we're going to look back on in a couple months and be like, oh, but what if this one decision went our way in the Palace game? Like there was a penalty shot for Saka, but it wasn't going to change the game. Like we can look back at that Everton game in December and be like, what the hell were we doing? How did we lose that game? We had no business losing that game. But like this game is going to be like, no, we were just properly outmatched. Like I think Palace played better against us than City and Liverpool did this, like in 2022. Like that says something about how good they were on Monday. I think the Odegaard thing's a big thing. The last two games, he's been a little bit quiet. And I think teams are trying to figure out how they can cut off those passing lanes to him, get him off the ball more and kind of force the ball out wider to Cedric. Like if you're a defending team, you'd much rather Cedric has the ball than Martin Odegaard. You'd much rather that outlet for Saka be Cedric than Odegaard. I think it says a little bit about the symmetry of the team, but I think the 4-3-3 isn't going to be something we see as much going forward. I think there's going to be a little bit more of a tactical switch up with the Tierney injury long term, particularly just kind of reverting, just like switching back to the 4-2-3-1 with the double pivot to allow Tavares to play higher and wide. I don't think he can play the same role that Tierney has been playing the last couple of months where he's been in more of a reserved tucked in role. If we can drop back into a 4-2-3-1, which as it looks right now to be a Xhaka and Lokonga pivot, with both Cedric and Tavares playing high and wide and Xhaka potentially dropping into that left space, I think that would be a lot better tactically with like what we got now without Tierney for the next couple of months.
Jay, is Lokonga up to this? Is he up to this final hectic run-in with the North London Derby, Manchester United coming up? Can we count on him to fill that void?
You know what? He did all right in his cameo, didn't he, when he came on? He looked okay. Options are very limited, aren't they? You know, we don't have anyone. Look, he's a good player. We haven't seen much of him, but you know what? The freshness might be a good, well, it will be a good thing. We haven't got too many options. I actually thought Cedric did all right the other night. I don't think he was as bad as what everybody's been saying. I thought he did okay in a team performance that was absolutely shocking. But yeah, to answer your question, he's definitely up for it. We're going to need Xhaka. We're going to need a switched on Xhaka, aren't we? The disciplined one, you know, the Xhaka that we have seen recently, and you know, we don't want to see any of the red card Xhaka, but options are very limited in there, aren't they? We don't have any, do we?
He just picked up the old yellow. He didn't fancy a red that particular night. We've got an email from Sheila, says our lack of credible options mean that Saka is being overworked. Pepe could have been an option, but he wasn't even on the bench. Does that mean we're going to have to get a winger in the summer as well, just to cover, I suppose, the Champions League if we're in it, and all the domestic cups? Mitch?
Yeah, I think there's always been in the conversation. We've been linked to a bunch of wingers. I think it's almost but guaranteed that Pepe will probably be out the door this summer. So we'll be looking at getting a right wing replacement. We've been linked with Rafinha, Cody Gakpo from Ajax. So players that can play the wing.
Oh, you've heard of him, have you?
Yes, I have heard of this Ajax player. So players
still trying to catch you out.
Yeah. Players that are versatile players that can play the wing. Because Saka is does have a lot of load. I mean, he's 20 years old and our best player, so he's undroppable. If the person that sent the email is proposing that if Pepe was fit, like we should have started him over Saka, I don't think that's the case. But it definitely hurt us that Pepe wasn't available because we didn't have someone like him to come off the bench. I don't know if he would have really changed the game. I think a lot of the things would have stayed the same if Pepe was to come in at any point, as opposed to someone else. But yeah, I think we'll definitely be looking for some sort of player to come in to kind of take that load off of Saka on the right wing, especially with more fixtures next season being in Europe. And then I want to touch out on Sambi. He was fantastic in his combo, cameo. Yeah, there we go. In his cameo, he was really, really effective. I think we see a lot of the like similar profile that Partey has as that lone six. I think we've seen that every single time we've seen Sambi. Like he's very, can be very composed on the ball, makes these nice turns to be able to keep the ball and like can hit these long balls. He's a really, really good player. We've seen the sparks. We've just got to see that consistency. If we're going to get top four, if Partey's out for a long time, which hopefully he's not, hopefully he's fine. We need him and Tavares. Like we've called on four of the six summer signings for all of this season and they've been great. We need the last two to have a big role in these last couple months in Tavares and Lokonga. So if we get top four, I think a lot will have to do with those two playing well.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, but Partey, the actual sort of physical way he was dealing with himself on the pitch, it looked like it was going to be a horrible injury and it was going to be a couple of weeks or, you know, maybe more. I think it was hamstring or something. He was holding that old leg, wasn't he? Right, hands up. Who thought it was a Saka penalty?
Yeah,
I suppose. Yeah. No doubt at all. It didn't even go to VAR, did it? No. Well, it's Arsenal, isn't it? The game was finally put to bed by the old carpet himself, Mr. Zaha. It was a penalty late on. Any doubts about that at all? I mean, he does look for it, doesn't he? He spends most of his time on the deck.
When I first saw it, I was like, that's not a penalty. And then I saw like the slow-mo replay and I saw Odegaard's foot. And I'm like, yeah, that's for sure a penalty. Like, you can't argue with that.
Just because it's awful.
Unlucky, but it is a penalty. Like, not much you can do.
Yeah, I think I actually tweeted that, he spends more time on the grass than anybody else, and he's got a particular relationship with the grass. I was like you, Mitch. I saw it first off in real time, and I was like, no, that's not a penalty. But he was looking for it. He does look for it. And if you give him the opportunity, he'll suck that up. And I'm not sure, probably thinking along the same lines as you, Jay, he kind of manufactured that to his sort of benefit, if you like.
Yeah, he loves a tackle. He loves a foul, doesn't he? You know he's actually draw a foul. But, by that point, we should have maybe scored, right? We should have at least got one. There was the Smith Rowe chance, wasn't there? And there was the Odegaard chance that he swept wide. And by the time that potential penalty, it could have been 2-2. And it's a different game, isn't it? But
that would have changed the game, because if Smith Rowe could have just got his foot around that ball a little bit better, and he's normally a good striker of the ball, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
And it was just, that you know, these chances,
didn't really connect at all,
it's
didn't
about
he?
Fractions.
Rolled it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as you say, Odegaard, I mean, that was a complete surprise. I expected that to go in the net. But yeah. Alexandre Lacazette now is now gone 19 hours and 23 minutes without a goal. I mean, you were talking last week, Mitch, about offering him another year. Can we do
that? I still don't know if that's the worst idea. I'm kind of like still on the fence. Like if the club is offering him another year, I'm cool with that. But if they let him go and we have to sign two strikers in the summer, I think that's also a fine direction. I'm like almost to the boat of leaning towards, like, I liked what I saw from Nketiah after he came on. I think he offered quite a bit. I think he had a shot from outside the box that, like, hit the bar.
That was, like, an epic shot.
I didn't see anyone talking about Eddie Nketiah taking a shot from outside of the 6-yard box, and it almost went in. He also linked play really well, had a lot of, like, really good one-touch passing, especially in the box. I think it led to that Smith Rowe opportunity where he just didn't get a good hit on it. I liked what I saw from Eddie Nketiah. I'm kind of curious to see if, like, what we could do with someone else at the number 9, whether that's Martinelli, whether that's Nketiah, because Lacazette is struggling right now. I almost think that it would just help him if he got 90 minutes, like some rest. Like he's like can't press for 60 minutes, like really, really effectively. And the things that he's supposed to be good at, he was not very good at Palace. So
Mitch, would you drop him for the next one?
I might. I don't think Arteta will.
Jay?
I would play Martinelli through the middle.
Yeah.
You can't fault Lacazette's effort, but I mean, you need your striker to at least take shots. And like Mitch said, Nketiah took a shot. I'm not entirely sure Nketiah is the answer. Lacazette's in a great position at the minute because there's no competition at all. But, you know, that Martinelli, he brings a little bit of that chaos factor, doesn't he? He's very busy. He's very quick, obviously. And I'd be tempted to do that. Like Mitch said, I think Lacazette's going to start pretty much most of the games in the running. But we might see him withdrawn a little bit earlier because, I mean, it was a bad performance, wasn't it? He wasn't the only one, but it was a bad performance. And you just see him dropping deeper and deeper. And he doesn't offer anything sort from a target man point of view, does he? You know, and
He got two headers, didn't he? But he spooned them right over the bar. I mean, by some distance.
Yeah, he doesn't carry any goal threat at all. And I think ultimately Brighton at home is a perfect game, isn't it? We're most probably going to get 3 points, aren't we? So
let's hope so.
Maybe try something different. And after the Palace game, but I don't think Mikel will. I think he'll just go with Lacazette.
Well, it's funny because there was a report today and it said about Gabriel Martinelli maybe changing his role slightly. I don't know whether someone's spoken to a reporter, you know, had a word in his ear or something, or it's just pure speculation. Mitch, what were you going to say?
I don't think this is like the time in which I know, like, whenever Lacazette has a bad performance, there's always going to be people that are be like, hey, what about Martinelli through the center? Because a lot of people want to see that. Some people want to see Smith Rowe in a false nine role. Again, we saw it a couple times last season. Didn't go great, but I think people are still curious about that, especially since he's like stepped up his ball striking this season. But I really don't see Arteta doing anything out of the ordinary with the striker position from here to the end of the season, unless he's forced to. If Lacazette is not the striker in the next 9 games, I think it's going to be Nketiah. I don't think it's going to be Smith Rowe. I don't think it's going to be Martinelli. As much as I'd love to see that, this is too important of a run to be just like experimenting. Like
Pep, it's a massive gamble, though, Nketiah, because I haven't really seen anything from it.
I feel like it's more of a gamble to be playing Smith Rowe or Martinelli in a role that they more or less aren't that familiar with, rather than Nketiah in his like actual position. We've seen him score goals. He's capable.
I just think they've both shown that they carry a goal threat, and neither Nketiah or Lacazette really have they? And I think you can understand. I'm with you. I don't think Mikel will do that. You can understand the growing the feeling amongst the fan base that you want to see both of those players, Martinelli and Smith Rowe, who both they've showed throughout the season that they carry a good, solid goal threat. And I don't know, maybe mix it up a little bit. I don't know.
See, I saw a comment online saying, whether you agree with it or not, Eddie Nketiah is all right for the Championship and the likes of those type of teams. But in the Premiership, he's just not focused enough. He doesn't deliver enough. He doesn't show willing enough. He does score goals. And I've got a problem with him, I must admit.
I've never seen, you know, like he comes from that crop of players. We've said this before, haven't we, Tom? He comes from this crop of players, you know, the Sakas, the Smith Rowe. I've never seen consistently anything in him to suggest that he will go to the levels that Saka and Smith Rowe have got to, you know, and he's our second striker or he's our alternative or to Lacazette. He's only ever really been that sort of fox in the box, right? Scoring from about 2 yards out and against weaker opposition. I've never seen that from him, but I mean, I hope he turns up and bags goals for the remainder of the season, but I just can't.
I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
Let's do the stats then. Crystal Palace, 6 shots on goal. Arsenal, 12. 5 shots on target for Palace, 3 for Arsenal. 31% possession for Palace, 69% for Arsenal. I find that hard to believe. I thought Palace had the ball much more.
Yeah,
I think most of that's game state. I think a lot of that was racked up in the second half when the game Palace were happy to sit back after going up 2-0. Which, if you're Crystal Palace playing against Arsenal at home and you go up 2-0, yeah, you're going to be happy to sit back and try to hit on the counter, maybe get a offhanded penalty to make it 3-0.
See what you mean? Because in the second half we picked it up, didn't we? We went through the gears and we were pressing all the time, but. There was nothing there. Palace, 293 passes. Arsenal, 647. Most of them didn't reach their destination, I would imagine. 70% pass accuracy for Palace. 86% for Arsenal. I beg to differ. Guys, who was your man of the match for Arsenal?
God.
I really struggled with this. I put it out on social media. I was like, I just don't know.
Sambi was probably the best player for me in the 15 minutes he came on. I like what I saw from him. Like of players that started, I liked what I saw from Smith Rowe the whole game. Obviously he was unlucky not to get a better hit on the ball on that first opportunity, and then he had pretty much an open goal that he didn't score on later. And so those are very disappointing, but I think he was probably our most dangerous attacking player throughout the entire match. So Smith Rowe, if I'm choosing a starter, but I really liked what I saw from Sandy.
What about you, Jay? What would you say?
God, you know, like it was
it's like it picking was, that shit out of Pepper, wasn't it?
It was pretty rough. Pretty rough. I mean, Lokonga looked good. Like Mitch said, and Nketiah looked good as well. I just thought it was collectively so bad. You can't really pick a man of the match, can you? It was just.
We've got one from social media, and they agree with my missus who sat there and watched the whole drivel. So it's interesting. I was really stuck. I couldn't really pick anyone. I said that Saka, when he flipped, he looked quite tasty for a bit. Martinelli put a lot of effort in, but it all came to naught. On social media, they went for Xhaka because he was consistent and he was solid. And as I was looking at that, you can't really know it, can you?
No, not at all.
That performance, sorry, Jay, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say I wouldn't give any of them anything over a 5, right? Anyway,
God, you're generous.
It was just rubbish. It was just really rough viewing. And it's so hard to pick a man of the match, you know.
There's a reason that the official Arsenal Twitter page does not put out a man of the match vote after losses. And it's because no one wants to vote on that. No one cares who the best player of a bad team was.
Just want to point this out. Arteta apologised for the performance after the match. Is that the right thing to do now, or is it a bit like Roy Keane says, it's getting a bit predictable, you should do your talking out on the pitch? Bearing in mind that it costs somewhere between £66 to £126, latest price for the North London Derby, do you feel it's right that the manager or the players should come out and go, oh, I'm really sorry about that?
I like that Arteta... I mean, if you're Arteta in an interview, it's hard to not do that. Like, you see, you have your team doing have a performance like that. It'd be hard to like be like, yeah, we were bad. Suck it, fans. Like, I mean, it's very easy. Like, if you're in an interview, it's like, yeah, we weren't up to it today. We want to apologize to the fans. That's, I think, very different from like the like thing that Man United like players have been like got on about this season, where they're like drafting 3-paragraph essays after every single loss. I think
that I didn't know they could write.
I think it's way different for their PR teams to be drafting 3-paragraph essays. Sorry. So I think it's way different for like a manager to be like, yeah, we weren't on it today. Apologize to the fans. We'll make it up to you. I think that's way different than like the same thing every game. Like, I mean, we haven't lost that many matches this season. So it's a lot different than a team that's been losing a lot and isn't supposed to, like Man United. So we're in a much different spot. But like, I loved what Arteta said after the match. Like, as I watched his interview, and I really, really liked what he had to say.
I saw Jay revving up there. What were you going to say, Jay?
I just think Mikel's like, he's an emotional guy, isn't he? You know, he's I think like he means it when he apologizes. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. He appreciates the fans, and he's, you know, from the very start, he's always spoke about getting the fans on board, and he could feel how detached the fans were from the club when he took over as manager. And like, I think it's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, did you say Roy Keane said?
Yeah, he doesn't like anything, does he?
Alex Ferguson never said sorry, did he? After Man United lost, different types of manager and different areas. Yeah, I think it's all right. I think that it's just Mikel. He's an emotional guy, isn't he? And I think when we don't play well, you know, he takes it personally, doesn't he? Because you're not telling, you know, we all know he didn't set the team out to play like that. You know, I can imagine that he's fuming, but
his face said everything. Every close up, it was you could almost see him kind of get aggravated when the camera went on him. It's like back off, whatever yeah. back off in Spanish is. I'm safe to look it up. You weren't here last week, Jay, so I'm going to quickly ask you, have you bought your latest Stella McCartney kit?
Oh, God, no. I'm steering clear of that. I am a sucker for the retro stuff, don't get me wrong. I've got quite a lot of it, but yeah, no, same. I won't be rushing out to buy that.
Oh, it's awful. Anyway, let's do the transfer rumours in 6 words or less. Glesson Bremer of Torino has been targeted. Anyone know him? Mitch? Call you out again, Mitch.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to let you fool me with a fake player. He's not real.
No, he's real. He's real. Serious. He's been targeted with Arsenal leading a host of European clubs. They're interested in his signature. He's a composed, positionally supreme centre-back with a superb aerial ability. It's easy to assume that this 25-year-old is a leader that Arteta would favour next to Ben White. That's what it says. He's real.
Okay.
What about Dybala?
Oh, no.
Juventus. Not Dybala. Heard of him? Not seen him?
Not a fit. That's my 3 words.
Not a fit. 3 words. Jay?
Unlikely to happen.
Yeah, mine was like, I'm not bothered. He doesn't really stand out for me. Or
high. He demand quite like substantial wages. So I don't know.
8.4 million euros per year.
He's a good player. I quite like him. But
yeah.
Right. I'm going to test you with another one. It's not. These are genuine players, right? Okay. Leslie Ugochukwu. He's a defensive midfielder from Rennes. He's 18, so he fits the bill. He's tall, powerful, good passer, relentless presser, right-footed, good in possession, hunts down the opponent, retrieves the ball, good vision and able to feed the strikers over distance. I've seen a lot of footage. He is being touted as probably an answer to Patrick Vieira. He's of that sort of mould.
I don't think that's the profile of midfielder that we're going to be signing this summer. I think we're looking for a more advanced eight, someone that's filled that left eight role that Xhaka's played for most of the season. I think we're pretty set when it comes to defensive midfielders, with like Sambi and Partey both being that kind of six that can hold it down in a lone pivot. Like in the current being Party and longer term being Sambi. And then if we revert to a double pivot, like we have Xhaka, we have more options there. I don't really see us going out and trying to sign a defensive midfielder this summer.
Well, I just put interesting for that because it is an interesting one. Having watched the footage, as soon as the name bounced out, I was on YouTube having a look at what was to offer. Right, these two closer to home. Again, it's social media, isn't it? Nuno Tavares could be off in the summer after a few below performances with a host of clubs interested, particularly in Portugal. Jay, what's your thoughts?
No, he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere unless we go and sign a left back, which I don't think we will. And it would be wrong to get rid of him, even on loan. I think he needs to spend time at the club and just improve. Because there's a player in there, isn't there?
He's coming for a lot of unfair criticism.
He's struggling for form. He's struggling for confidence. You could argue that maybe Mikel was a bit rash when we played Forest by taking him off that early, but he wasn't playing very well, and he wasn't playing very well the other night. I think he just needs a bit of faith, I suppose, and just needs an arm around him, doesn't he? And it needs just to be spoken,
an old fashioned cuddle and a word in the ear. You're the future.
I think Nuno has been exactly the player that we signed in the summer. I think everyone saw that he is on paper a similar profile to Tierney, to where when KT's not available, we have a player who can fill into the role effectively, and we don't have to like play Xhaka at left back like we did after the sub on Monday and like we did in the back half of last season. I think he's been exactly what a lot of people should have expected from him. He's had some really good performances. He's also had some really poor performances. He's a very raw player, very young player. I think it'd be unwise of us to get rid of him this early. I think he's 22, 21, and he's very easily can develop into a very, very good player. He's got the physical tools. He's just got to get over some certain parts of his game and really refine parts of his game. And I absolutely think that he can fill in for KT the rest of the season. I think there's people that are being maybe Saka or Xhaka should play left back because Nuno wasn't great. We have to we have to trust him. We have to put faith in him.
Well, to be
fair, we signed him to be our backup left back.
It was a collectively poor defensive performance, wasn't it?
I don't think you can call on him specifically. Like Gabriel was not necessarily any help as the center back that was next to him. And the sub wasn't necessarily because he was playing that poorly. The sub made sense because you'd rather have Martinelli on and be an attacker and drop Xhaka into defense because he's more secure in defense than Nuno is. I think that sub made sense, even if Tavares is playing well. So I don't see any weight in that. I don't think we sell him. I think there's no reason to lighten a position when he can very easily grow into a very, very effective player at that position.
I just put the word crap because it's another one of these things where a player has a bad game and then all of a sudden they want to burn him at the stake. It's just absolute rubbish. The last one here, closer to home as well, Kieran Tierney to Real Madrid.
Yeah,
50 million apparently.
I mean, I can't see it happening. But Tierney's he's a class player. He's a class act. So it's a good thing, I think, that the speculation, because he's a top player, isn't he? Can't see it happening.
I think the thing about Kieran is he actually epitomises everything that Arteta wants to put into this side. That energy, that passion.
He's going to be at the club for a good few years yet. I think he loves London, doesn't he? And I think he's an integral part of the team. And I'm sure he's one of the captains that Mikel looks at, great character, loves the club. I don't think there's anything wrong with speculation from the bigger clubs, shows he's doing something right.
So I come to you, Jay, and I say 50 million for Kieran Tierney. Are you going to sell or not?
No. Because you take 50 million, you know, like you have to replace him. There aren't that many good left-sided fullbacks, are there, in the world? Yeah. And you're going to have to spend pretty much all of that to get a player that has to bed into the team. It'd have to be more than that, substantially more. The only thing with Tierney that worries everybody is the injury record, isn't it? It's just he's made of glass, isn't he? He misses a lot of games, and like Mitch said, this injury came in the international break, but it so easily could have come in the first 10 minutes against Palace, couldn't it? And you worry, you know, when he gets smashed or when he's, you know, because he's very committed as a player, isn't he? You know, he doesn't
just
going to
say that, yeah, he's full pelt, isn't he? He doesn't hold back.
No, it's not in his arsenal, is it? So just think maybe if he could just work with Tavares on Tavares's sort of defensive side, make him a little bit more, slightly more rigid, Tavares, not because Tavares is always looking to go forward, isn't he? He's always looking to join the attack, and he looks... I think he's not as bad as everybody makes out, Tavares. I think if he was just a little bit more defensively minded, and of course he does need the left-sided centre-back to help him with that. But maybe whilst Tierney's out, he can work with Tavares from a defensive point of view. You never know.
There was a suggestion, Mitch, that Tomiyasu, if he comes back, could switch into Tierney's role. Ben White could go out to the right, and Rob Holding could come into the middle. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've seen that proposed, that Tomiyasu, when he's healthy, could play left back. He's a very two-footed player. And then we keep Cedric at right back even. It would kind of keep the symmetry that we have been doing for the last couple of months. I don't see that happening. I think Tomiyasu comes back, we put him at right back. I think that opens things up for Tavares on the other side a little bit more. When Tomiyasu comes back, I think we have a little bit more tactical flexibility when that happens, where we can potentially kind of just invert the 4-3-3 that we've played into having the left back be the more advanced player rather than what Cedric's been as the right back, because that's why Tierney's played in that less advanced role the last couple of months. So I don't know. It'll give us more tactical flexibility when Tomiyasu comes back, but I don't think I really just don't think Arteta does anything wild the last 9 games unless he's forced to. I think it got in people's heads when Xhaka got put at left back at halftime in this game, that like maybe Arteta's going to do something weird. Maybe he has a little bit more of that in him, but like I don't see anything weird happening. I don't see any player playing outside of a position they haven't played before. The weirdest thing I could see happening is Xhaka playing left back, and I don't want that to happen because, well, I don't think he's bad in that position. It takes so much away from the center of the field when we play him in that
it's
position.
It's like plucking a barrel with your fingers, isn't it?
And yeah. Unless we're chasing a goal and we want Smith Rowe and Odegaard as a pair of eights with Sambi in front, kind of like we were in the second half against Palace, because I am interested in that. I am very, very interested in what Smith Rowe and Odegaard as a pair of eights with a six behind them can do. I just don't really see like any major tactical switches happening. There's definitely gonna be some tweaks, especially with the 3 major injuries in the squad with Tomiyasu, Partey and Tierney. But I don't see any major changes.
Right. I've just got to do a couple of things before we go. I've got to say hi to Melanie Kay, because I said I would do. If you want to write in or send a question or just say hi, it's an Arsenal thing @gmail.com. Jay, had one from Linda for you. Linda wants to know what those 3 pictures are next to your Arsenal crest. Mm-hmm. Linda, what are you doing? Are you going to try and rob his house or something? So, get it on there. She thinks they're Arsenal pictures.
So that one there,
yeah,
that is me and Tony Adams.
Shut up.
That one there is me and Ian Wright.
Are you just making this up?
And that one there is me, Ray Parlour, Paul Merson, Charlie.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Very gross.
We've got to have a look at that Tony Adams one. Come on, mate.
All right, one second.
Got to have a look at that. Hold on. This is where we really push the boat out and we get Jay to show us his wares. Look at that. He's walking around as well. Oh, my giddy aunt.
So these pictures I didn't choose. I chose two Arsenal ones, but one of my friends, the lad that I went with, got absolutely ruined, like absolutely proper drunk. And he like passed out at the table. It was quite embarrassing. So we had to leave just before the end. So I had to go grab my photo with two England pictures, which I was a bit disappointed. But yeah, that's me and Tony Adams.
That's fantastic. Linda, I hope you're satisfied with that. Nosy person, honestly. Right, let's get back on track. I was going to say, did you see that Aaron Ramsey scored again? And Doc Cotton died. June Brown. Unbelievable. Have you heard this, Mitch? Every time Ramsey scores,
I saw him trending the day after about that. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
But it's very funny how that keeps happening. There's a similar thing in baseball. There's a player named Nick Castellanos who has become like notorious because there was a announcer that was like apologizing for like saying a gay slur in a broadcast. And as he was reporting, he's like, I don't know if I'll ever put this headset again, as Castellanos hits a deep fly ball into left field. And that's going to be a 3-1 ball game. And it's like, every single time Nick Castellanos hits a home run, something bad happens. And there's been multiple times in which announcers have been like apologizing for something on air as Castellanos has hit a home run. So I think it's kind of similar to that.
Well, let's have a look at it. In the past 6 years, Whitney Houston has died after he scored. Paul Walker, Fast and Furious, David Bowie, Richard Attenborough, all at the hands of the Ramsey curse. But he's done a real good favour for humankind because he got rid of Bruce Forsyth, Colonel Gaddafi and Bin Laden. So, I mean, high-profile names indeed. What do you want to say about the upcoming game with the Candy Kings of the South Coast? How's that going to go, Jay? Up against Brighton?
Yeah.
None of that half full, half empty business. Come on, mate.
Yeah, we should get a result. We're at home. I think it's one of the, well, on paper anyway, it's one of the easier games in the running, isn't it? So I am going to go, so I'm going to pick a score. I'm going to go 3-0 home win.
Mitch.
Yeah. I'm going big.
I would love a 3-0 home win. I think they've been on poor enough form. We need a bounce back. We have bounced back after all of our losses in the last couple of months. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a big win for Arsenal. I think we've got something to prove. We're seeing reports from like big media outlets of like, oh, are Arsenal done? And it's like, this is our second loss, like our third loss in this calendar year. Like we're still tied with Spurs and still have a game in hand. We're not finished yet.
No.
And I think the team has a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and they're going to want to bounce back. Hopefully it's a big win at the Emirates.
I will go for 2-0. I'll stick my neck out and say 2-0. Isn't it funny when you listen to the Sky commentary, they can't wait for Arsenal to, you know, that first goal went in and it was like, oh, I bet Tottenham are loving this now type of thing. And it was like, oh, they're really under the cosh. Are they going to make their way? They can't wait. And it just backs up what we always say about the media bias. Chaps, it's been brilliant to have the podcast family back. It's been a pleasure to have you both. I would shut your windows, Jay, tonight and lock all your doors. Double lock them in case Linda comes around for that picture. I don't know what she's playing at. I've got nothing interesting up on my wall. And yours is even less interesting, Mitch.
Yeah, this is the epitome of temporary dorm room for 5 months.
You know, when they do that blank canvas thing and they say, oh, minimalism is the thing. I think you're taking it a bit far.
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. We'll have to rely on you, Jay, just to put all the paraphernalia on the line. Jay, Mitch, thanks ever so much. I'll see you on the next one. And let's Let's hope we get a good result. See you later, guys.
For sure. See you later.
Enough chat, banter, and badinage. Let's have a musical interlude.
The loss against Tottenham Hotspur was one of the worst of my career. Of course, I did not see the game, but I am told the referee made a lot of mistakes. And since it worked so well for Rafa, I wanted to tell the fans, the ex, the internet trolls. This is my story, my press conference. Why are you looking at me? When I rap, you know it's a medley. All the ladies with me have worse knees than Ledley. Yes, I'm the king, I'm the principal. Mon Dieu, I made the Gunners invincible. I remember the old days, we used to score for fun. And no one had heard about this special one. Guillaume would cry when I walked in the room. Thierry Henry told me I was his va-va-voom. Think of my signings, they don't compare. Pires, Lundberg, Niklas Bentner. My scouts find players in the maternity ward. We signed the contract before they cut the cord. I can understand why the fans are fussed, but what happened to in Arsene we trust? I sell these players when I please. Do you want Ashley back in his tighty whiteies? We're better off without them if you ask me. Rather have Franny Jeffers here than Samir Nasri. They always say I only sign the French. Just ask Frimpong, we only sign the Dutch.
Please leave me alone. Haven't I suffered enough? I miss you so much. Footy flying Dutchman. Come back to me. Come home.
Do you think I care that I give a shit about what Piers Morgan writes on his tweet? No. He should work on his show, look daily at his mirror, and try to get slimmer. If I only had a team of Gareth Bales, our defense has more leaks than the whole of Wales. I tried to sell Jovinho for a fiver, but the sacker turned slower than a learner driver. The secret is, I just do what I'm told. I'm incredibly scared of that nutter Steve Ball. He's always shouting and he's never nice. Every night in my dreams, I long for bad rice. Like the sugar babes, I'm trying to be stronger, but I get more stressed and my coke gets longer. Seeing Thurkey smile, it makes me ill. And someone give Villas Boas a strip seal. Cesc, when can we Skype? It has been so long since we talked last. I need to stop the Spurs. Maybe I'll spike another lasagna, I don't know. It's a coat, not a sleeping bag, okay? It's a coat, not a sleeping bag. Bradford are a good team. Theo, stop behaving like a little bitch. Please, leave me alone. Why did I sign Chamek? I'm going to have to keep Wilshire in my basement.
No 1-0 jingles this week, Dave, is there, eh? No 1-0 to the Arsenal? No. It's been a very sad affair this week. Still eating, though, aren't you, Dave? Eh? A bag of Doritos. And ketchup. Oh, mate. Stop it.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
You may recall, with gritted teeth, the wonder goal scored by Ryan Giggs against Arsenal in the 98-99 FA Cup semi-final, where he revealed that his parents were, in fact, a gorilla and a Persian carpet. A full chest of cascading black curly follicles on a fleshy landscape. But is he the hairiest footballer ever? A question asked rightfully by news.paddypower.com, where he was assessed for his masculine mane with the likes of Mile Jedinak, Joe Allen, Trifon Ivanov, Socrates, Kevin Keegan, and Carlos Valderrama. The winner was Carlos Valderrama, a worthy winner. He was like a lion with hair growing out of every orifice. You may not remember him. You might have to ask your granddad, or you might have to go on Google. Moving on, let's move on to two of the most unwanted records for Arsenal. Arsenal were the team with the most shots on goal in a defeat. It's a record you don't want. Who else would manage 35 attempts on goal and still lose 1-0 to West Ham, courtesy of a Bobby Zamora strike that helped them stay up? The last unwanted record is the player to hit the woodwork the most times. We're going to throw in one of those pauses that they do on the quiz shows so that you can have a little think. It won't be too long. Off you go. That's it. That's your time up. Robin van Persie was denied by the uprights 44 times. Perhaps it's not the worst record in the world, but the Dutchman can certainly count himself incredibly unlucky. All that information courtesy of givemesport.co.uk.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Now, I was in the Dave Mobile the other day, which, for those who want to know, is a Vauxhall Astra Elite. And we were en route to Mackie D's. Radio was blaring, windows were open, and we were doing that chaps thing, you know, where you lean on the window with your elbow, try and look cool. We both failed. On the radio, Carly Rae Jepsen comes on with Call Me Maybe. Do you remember it from a few years back? Dave starts singing. Well, you do, don't you? And you know that thing we all do? We don't really know the words, but you sling one in for good measure. You've done it, haven't you? Well, the proper lyrics are, hey, I just met you and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe. And all the other boys try to chase me, but here's my number, so call me maybe. Dave did everything right apart from all the other boys try to shave me. What were you thinking of at the time, Dave? Don't answer that. Well, you never do anyway, do you? That's it. We're all done here. Thanks to the podcasters known as Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter, SilentDave101. Jay is also there as the Bald Gooner. You can find Mitch as Mitch Piotta. Don't forget to check out his blogs at The Arse Review. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy and all the folks at arsedevils.com. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Like and follow the audio version and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Missing Isaiah, an American Arsenology? Well, you don't have to. Look him up on Twitter. A Arsenology for 30 minutes or less match reviews delivered with a combination of quirk and music. Thanks to you once again for your continuing support. Please like and follow the podcast, whether you look or listen. And finally, remember one thing. North London is most certainly red.
keep rushing. The smell of sex, the smell of suicide. All these dream things I can't keep inside.